You know, you probably connect with something in the midst of that scene right there, but you know, we talk about everyday breakthroughs, and you know, these are the kind of things we're talking about right here when it comes to relationships. So we're going to take a look at a lot of material right there to talk about this morning, which we'll hit on some. But first of all, my name's Kurt. I'm a pastor here at Crosspoint. Really excited you're here with us today. You know, we want to welcome you, especially if you're a guest today. You know, we're really excited that you've chosen to join us and just kind of check out what God might want to do in your life. That's what we do every week that we gather here at Crosspoint. And so today we're beginning this new series called Everyday Breakthroughs. And we're going to be looking at key parts of our life that we need breakthroughs in. And today we're going to be taking a look at relationships. And if you're like me, you know, you just went through the end of 2011, you kind of do some reflection, you spend a little time saying, you know, where have I been over the course of the year? What are some of the things in my life that I want to change as I head into the next year? And it's a natural time where we have those conversations. The problem is oftentimes not the desire to want to make the change, but what we begin to realize is the areas that we're stuck in, the places where we say, man, I've been in this place for a while, there's often barriers that prevent us from actually being able to go forward. And so, you know, as we just saw in that scene, I mean, all kinds of relational barriers, you know, things, patterns of behavior, things that as much as we might want to change our hopes, our intentions, our motives, there's patterns that we fall into that just continue to deteriorate some of the most critical relationships in our lives. And so, you know, there's probably at least, as you head into 2012, probably one relationship that you say, you know, this is a relationship I really hope to take to a new place. I mean, whether it's a relationship with a spouse, relationship with somebody you're dating, maybe a relationship with one of your kids, even one of your young kids, you know, relationships can deteriorate even at a young age. Maybe there's a coworker, maybe there's a friend, a neighbor. Relationships are key. I mean, we are wired relationally, and yet we're also wired to struggle. I mean, sometimes our wiring, as we're going to look at today, actually prohibits us from really taking our relationships to new places. So we're going to take a look at this today, and as we do so, you know, I really think that every one of us want at least one relationship, two relationships. You know, we all have those relationships where we say, I really want this to go somewhere. We just don't know how to get it there. We try the one time, I'm gonna buy the one gift, you know. Forget the rest of the year, I'm gonna buy one Christmas gift, and I hope that makes the breakthrough. Well, as we go through these next weeks, we're gonna kind of get past the one time single event episodes and look at how we can create sustainable breakthroughs. How do we create those opportunities where every day and everyday decisions we actually feed and make decisions that create and sustain the breakthroughs we need, whether it's in relationships, whether it's in our careers. We're gonna take a look at finances, we're gonna take a look at some of the addictions that tend to grab us and hold on to our lives. But we're going to say, how do we make these breakthroughs? And you know, typically we fall into one of three categories as we think about these barriers, as we think about these things that prevent us from moving forward. You know, the first way that we typically respond to these, which is most common, is we avoid them. You know, we say, man, I don't know how to wrap my hands around this barrier, this thing that I need to move past. And so we typically just say, well, I'm going to put it off for another day. I'm going to wait for another time. Even though we want to move out of that situation, we just kind of ignore the major thing that's going on in our lives. Another way we often kind of handle these barriers that we face is we get so frustrated with being stuck in the same place that we actually say, you know, it's time for me to face this thing head on, but we do so badly. I mean, we just handle it poorly because we don't have the tools, we don't have the resources, or at least the processes to create that sustainable breakthrough. And so in the end, we say, man, I put myself out there, I began to hit this barrier head on in my life, and yet the result was the same as when I was avoiding it. I'm still at the place where I'm stuck. I'm still in that place where, you know, I'm not moving forward. And so we kind of say, we just kind of slip back into this avoidance tactic again. And so I think what we're all kind of going for is we say, you know, if we're going to make breakthroughs, I want to go someplace new. And so what I want us to look at today as it comes to relationships is how do we do this and do it well? How do we face the barriers in our relationships and maybe a specific critical relationship in our life and hit it head on and then do it well, so that we can create that breakthrough that begins to take that relationship to new places. And so that's what we're going to tackle today. And in doing so, one of the things I'm going to do over the next 4 weeks is I'm going to invite kind of a resident expert to join me for each of the topics we're going to be looking at today. And so I want you to welcome to the platform with me, Scott McDonald. Let's give him a hand as he joins me. Welcome, Scott. And Scott is not somebody who's new to Crosspoint here. In fact, Scott's a familiar face. He's actually a great friend of mine, and so we are going to take a seat on these comfy couches today. And You know, Scott is a member of our governance board team here at Cross Point, and so he kind of is a behind the scene person that for one keeps accountability with me as in my relationship with our leadership here at Cross Point. But also Scott's been here to teach from the platform with us before. If you're newer, he may be new to you, but Scott, you know, one of the things that I love about Scott is he's a high capacity leader. Scott is somebody who is a high capacity leader in the corporate world. He just you know, just thrives in leadership development. In fact, that's a lot of what you spend your time in, which leadership development is primarily about how do I work with people? Not just how do I manage myself, but how do I work with people? Scott and his wife Lisa also co-coordinate a ministry called Dynamic Marriage at their church, Northview Church, on the north side of Indy over in Carmel. And in fact, we've had members from Crosspoint here that have gone through those courses. And so, you know, again, Scott understands relationships, and probably the biggest reason I'm inviting him to join me today as we look at this topic is that Scott has been a coach for me. Some of the people I'm going to be bringing are people that have specifically coached me through some of those key breakthrough times in my life. So this is my good friend Scott, and we're just going to kind of unpack today. We have notes here, and that's primarily so that we're not here till 2 o'clock today, because there's a lot of stuff that we could cover, but I really want this to be a conversation today. And so Scott, help us understand, just as we get started here, you know, oftentimes when we find ourselves stuck relationally, you know, we're hitting barriers and we don't know how to move forward, there's usually a crucial conversation we're not having. Or at least if we're having it, we're not having it well, and it's just contributing to our stuckness.
Right. So this whole element of being stuck, you're right. It actually, research says that it stems from a crucial conversation, a critical conversation that you're either not holding or you're not holding well. So whenever you find yourself stuck in a relationship, there's typically this moment where you reach a point where a conversation just needs to happen. And as you kind of said earlier, we typically go one direction or the next with it. There's really three elements to a crucial conversation or a critical conversation. So if you think about these elements and kind of put yourself in the mindset of maybe where you're stuck, as Kurt was talking about earlier, there's typically high stakes. Right, there's something critically important going on. There's also opposing opinions, right? You see things from different sides of the aisle. And then there's also strong emotions. Now, I want you to think about these three elements in those moments where you're kind of struggling a little bit and put it in the context of watching a basketball game. Okay, I was watching the IU basketball game on New Year's Eve with a bunch of IU friends, right?
Any call-outs for IU here this morning?
Yeah. I hoping I would get a little bit of love. All right, so thank you for that. High stakes, right? We were playing the number 2 team in the country, Ohio State, right? Strong emotions. If you've ever watched a basketball game with me and my friends, there are very strong emotions in that game. But we were all IU fans. We all got along. Really wasn't the need for stuckness. We weren't stuck. Then enter Ohio State guy, okay? Comes in an Ohio State jersey and sits right down in the middle of us. Now, you can imagine the conversation turned very ugly very quick. Now, that's probably a bad example, but it's the most illustrative example to say that when these three elements occur, that's when we get stuck. You can have 2 of these elements and everything can be fine, but when all 3 coexist, it becomes an issue. So what happens when we have an issue, right? We can do 1 of 2 things. We can either talk it out or we can act it out. And as Kurt said earlier, what we typically end up doing is we act it out very poorly, right? So research tells us, and this is all from some material that I've taught and researched over the years, research tells us that the first thing that degrades when we have this situation is not our behavior. It's our motive. Right? I want to repeat that because it's really important. We find ourselves acting differently, but it's not the first thing that degrades. What degrades is actually our motive, right? It's our heart. So the reality is it all starts with the heart. Mm-hmm. And if we can kind of get control of the place that we're coming from, mm-hmm. we can have much more fruitful conversations. In fact, if we don't, any attempts to have a conversation could be seen as insincere, shallow, or just quite honestly, we can hit that barrier, we hit that wall.
And I think this is a really important thing because, you know, oftentimes we don't like the behaviors that come out when we get stuck in a relationship, but it ultimately comes down to the heart.
Absolutely.
I mean, as we look at relationships, it ultimately comes down to the heart. In fact, we see this in the scriptures. We see one of the great figures of the Bible, King David, who really has some issues of motive. He has issues with his heart, and it has great impact on his relationships. And I know some of us, if you know the story, if you're familiar familiar with the Bible. Even if you're not, you've probably heard the story of King David. And you're sitting there going, how can this guy be called great? I mean, King David was a guy who, you know, ruined relationships. He's a guy who saw someone else's wife out in the field, and he took her in, and he had an affair with her. And it didn't stop there. I mean, there was a pregnancy that came out of that, and so he brought this woman's husband home from the battlefield, who was, by the way, fighting a battle for King David so they could remain kind of the ruler of that particular area. He brings her husband home in hopes that they would lay together and it would look like this pregnancy came out of it. The guy has integrity, right? I mean, his motives are pure. And so, you know what he does? He actually lays at the doorway of the city. He says, hey, how can I go home and sleep with my wife when all my buddies are out fighting on the battlefield? That just wouldn't be right, right? And so he lays at the doorway of the city, and David just like, his motives just continue to deteriorate to the point where he actually murders the husband of the woman he had this affair with. And so, you know, we look at this, we're like, man, you know, here's a guy who screwed up. How do you call him great? Well, the key thing with David was that David was open. He was willing to look inside. He was willing to say, hey, this isn't just about what I want. But David was interruptible. And so we see with David that he was actually willing to face his barriers. I mean, this became a very big barrier in his leadership and his relationships and in every aspect of his life. And so he's willing to say, okay, I need to address this. I need to move past this barrier. In fact, we see him, just a few months later in Psalm 139, we see him saying these words. He says to God, search me, God, know my heart, and test me and know my anxious thoughts. He says, see if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. Now, what really jumps out to me about that is this word, these two words, lead me. Because if I'm honest, when it comes down to me making my own decisions for how I think I ought to handle relationships and situations, I usually end up handling it badly. I mean, it's just the way, maybe I'm wired, it's the way that my mind works, and yet we see in David here, he says, hey, God, I want you to lead me in this. I want you to help me understand what it means to really relationally connect and honor other people.
The expression that we often use is that we're on the wrong side of our eyeballs. Think about that visual.
And what does that mean? I mean, what does that look like?
We're looking out at everyone else and we're casting judgment on everyone else instead of looking inside, mm-hmm. right? Looking, mm-hmm. leading ourselves, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Allowing God to lead us. Mm-hmm. We tend to kind of just look at everyone else and cast judgment instead of looking internally at how we can play a role in the situation.
Right. Right.
So let's talk a little bit more about what happens in these moments. And I'm sure you're going to be able to relate to these because I certainly can. If you watch that video, he referenced the middle. There's 1,000 examples that go on in that little interaction, and those types of things, unfortunately, can be very familiar to all of us. So we typically go to two ends of the spectrum. The first end of the spectrum would be silence mode. Right? Silence mode is where we start withholding information. We reach that critical point, we're frustrated, the emotion's running high, and we just shut down. Now there's three things that kind of fit into silence mode, and they're really not critically important. The critical importance is recognizing when you're in silent mode. And some people naturally default to silent mode. Right? It can be anything from withdrawing, where you just end the conversation altogether. By the way, I am the master at withdrawing from a difficult conversation. When I'm done, I'm done. And to use the words from the video clip, I just proclaim that I'm done. Now, you can imagine how well that goes over in the McDonald household, right? Proclaiming that you're done with the conversation when the other person is still carrying the emotion, carrying the opinion that's different than my opinion, but I just decide I'm done. The next is avoidance. Maybe we can talk and I can still interact with the person that I've reached this point with, but we're never going to touch the subject, right? The real subject. And often in marriages, which we've talked about marriage ministry here before, the difficulty is we avoid the real issue for a long period of time. And it degrades. It actually does damage because we're avoiding the real issue. Sure, we're interacting. When people see us at parties and hanging out, we're having a good time. But there's a real issue that we're still stuck on. We haven't broken through the barrier. And then the last thing is masking. Masking is where we use sarcasm or we sugarcoat things. That video clip was loaded with sarcasm. Granted, because it's a comedy, but how often do we make sarcastic comments when inside you saw what was happening to the father, the husband, right? It was boiling inside him. Those little sarcastic comments got bigger and bigger and bigger, and clearly there was an impasse that they were reaching.
And you know, sarcasm is something that Scott knows. This has been one of my pet peeves for years. You know, sarcasm is something that just degrades a relationship. When you're sarcastic with someone, there's always an out, even though there's often humor involved, and we can be sarcastic with one another, we have those moments, but whenever there's sarcasm in a relationship, it always leaves that hint of in the back of your mind saying, you know, I know they were joking around with me, but is there something they're trying to tell me too? And we never know. It actually puts us on guard. In fact, we very rarely feel safety when sarcasm is a part of a conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's contrast silence mode. We can all relate to that, right? What would be the opposite end of the spectrum from silence mode? Would be violence mode, right? And I don't mean violence like we're throwing fists or that type of thing, although perhaps that can happen in some situations. Violence mode is where we're actually trying to compel someone to our point of view, right? So we're not avoiding the issue, we're hitting it dead on, and we're using every bit of arsenal that we have to get our point across. I see some people smirking, smiling, looking at each other right now, because I think some people can relate to that. Now, we toggle back and forth from silence mode to violence mode often, but when we're in violence mode, it may look something like controlling behavior, right? If I shout louder than you, then I'll get my way. Mm-hmm. Labeling. Right? We start putting names on things. Well, you always do that. Or, you know, your mother does that all the time. Or your father looks just like that. Those are things that just, right? I don't even need to explain.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We all know what,
we know what those are. We know what those are. Some of us probably felt them this morning.
Absolutely.
Just getting ready to come to church, of all things.
Absolutely. And then the last one would be attacking. And attacking behaviors are very obvious, right? It's where we are raising our voice. It's not just controlling the situation, but we're actually dominating the situation.
Something that just happened in the last week, you know, this can happen like with, you know, sometimes we think this is with our spouses, with coworkers. You know, this happened in my home with my 9-year-old. And it was one of those moments where, you know, we're having a conversation, and that's a critical relationship in my life. And she was a little more brazen, a little sharper than I think a 9-year-old should be in speaking to her very honorable father, of course. And so, you know, as that happened, I immediately kind of amped it up. I mean, all of a sudden I'm like, well, hey, you don't speak this way. And I took it up a notch. Well, as you can imagine, I mean, she's right on that edge of the tweener years. And she took it up a notch. And before long, it just keeps going. I mean, violence isn't necessarily physical violence, though, you know, sometimes we begin to slam things, throw things as an expression of just the adrenaline pumping. For me, I ended up experiencing what I see in Proverbs 18. This idea of, where this writer of wisdom says, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment. It's like my judgment. I mean, here I am, a 38-year-old grown adult interacting with a 9-year-old, and yet my judgment goes out the door because I have high stakes, high emotion, and a lot of passion.
Absolutely, absolutely. So here's an interesting question. Why is it when we need to perform our best, right? We know it's a difficult situation. We need to react in the best possible way. We often end up performing at our worst. Right? Why is
that? That's a great question.
Yeah, so there's actually some physiological reasons for that. Now, I'm not about to let you off the hook. I just want you to know that. But I do want everyone to understand that there are some physical reasons that we react the way we react from time to time. The first one would be biological reasons. So let me describe what happens to you when a conversation becomes crucial. Right? When tense emotion begins to enter in, there's these two little things called adrenal glands, right? And they sit right on top of your kidneys, right in the back. I don't think you can feel them, but if you all reach back there, you can probably just generally know where they are. And when emotion starts running high, they immediately start pumping adrenaline throughout your blood. It's a biological reaction. You cannot control it. It happens to everyone. It is the way we are genetically wired. And it's pumping it to your muscles because you're feeling a threat, and that's what the body does. It reacts in such a way where it pumps adrenaline into your muscles. Now, the fascinating part about this is we have a finite amount of blood in our bodies. So it needs to pull blood from some other area of the body. So, of course, where does it pull blood from? The brain. And more specifically, the higher reasoning area of the brain. biologically what happens is adrenaline is coursing through your blood, and blood is being drained from your brain. So you're becoming dumber and more mad.
That would explain it right there.
There you go. There you go. So that's the biological thing that actually physically happens. So we are genetically created to have bad conversations, right? That's just the way we were physically created. The other thing that contributes to it is real-time occurrences. You know the expression, practice makes perfect?
Right.
Well, when it comes to difficult conversation, that doesn't apply, right? It's perfect practice that makes perfect.
I mean, it's one of those moments where you always wish, I wish I could have said this in that moment.
Absolutely.
But we're not prepared for it.
We're not prepared for it. We don't have any opportunity because they come, and they come fast. And immediately that biological reaction starts happening, and we have no way to actually prepare for a difficult conversation. The last element, the reason I would say that we handle conversations poorly, is self-defeating behaviors. It's actually a byproduct of the biological reaction and the real-time occurrence, right? So if what's happening is we are doped up on adrenaline and we're physically dumber than we were 5 seconds before, we are going to make some pretty dumb moves. We're going to do or say things that just are unlike anything we've ever said before. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm quite certain people out there, when they've been in this situation, have said things, and when they look back, or if they were taped, what did I just say? How did I say that? What was going through my head? What was going through your head was a lot less than goes through your head when you're thinking rationally. So again, not letting anyone off the hook, but when these situations happen, that's the physical thing that goes on. And it's much more difficult to get back to a place of safety.
So, you know, this is really important to understand. And now we're going to get to kind of the point where we say, how do we actually make the change? What are the things we can do to create the safety and create opportunities to have good conversations? Because what we don't want is you going home and saying, hey, you're in an intense conversation. It's starting to go bad. And you're like, well, they told me I got dumb when I got to these situations. I mean, that is not your cop-out, right? I mean, I hear people say that. I've literally had people say to me, well, Kurt said, you know, it's this way because of this. And it's like all of a sudden I own your problems. And so I don't want to own your problems this morning. So actually Scott would own them because he said that. So let's look at how do we create opportunities to have good conversations with the critical relationships. I mean, because we're not talking the casual neighbor. We're talking the people that are the most critical, influential, connected people in our lives right here.
Absolutely.
Is where we have these problems.
The first thing we need to do is establish what the goal is. The goal is not to win. Now, that sounds very contrary because we're in a discussion. We've got strong emotions, opposing opinions. You would think that the goal is to win. The goal is to get into dialogue, right? Dialogue is defined as the free flow of meaning between two or more people. I'll repeat that. Dialogue is the free flow of meaning between two or more people. The goal should always be, how do we get into dialogue? Quick example. We all have watched what's going on with our political spectrum right now, right? We have one party that feels one way, one party that feels another way. Do you honestly think that when they get into a conversation and feel so strongly about their own opinions, that if they don't talk it through, they're ever going to come to a resolution? They're not. The goal always has to be dialogue. Because when you get into a period of dialogue, you start sharing your opinions and your feelings. And those things matter. They should matter to you. They should matter to me. It's actually, we all carry around this thing that we call the pool of meaning. Right? The pool of meaning. It's like a pool. Just imagine a pool. And in this pool is all my opinions, my feelings, my thoughts on the matter. And the goal should always be to get to a pool of shared meaning, where my opinions, my feelings, my actions are all put in the same pool as yours, and we can begin having a fruitful discussion from that. Anything less is fruitless again. Now, the other element of this that's critically important, if dialogue is the goal, is to have safety. Because you cannot get into a dialogue or have a breakthrough moment unless you have established safety. It's just too important. Safety is the precursor to being able to enter into that pool of shared meaning that I was talking about. Quick story about safety. Some of you know I had the opportunity last year to do a trip to South Africa. We were dealing with the AIDS pandemic there, and it was an incredible trip. At the very end of the trip, we went off into a wild game reserve just to kind of do some dialoguing and talking about everything that we had experienced that entire time we were there. This is a true story, by the way. I could never make something like this up. So literally about 5 minutes, I haven't even unpacked my bag. We're there, somebody yells out, "There's a lion, let's go." We jump in a car, four people in a really small car. We're driving on this windy dirt road through weeds on both sides looking for this lion that someone spotted about a quarter of a mile from our campsite. Okay, so anyone got the adrenaline going just a little bit? I want you to step into this moment with me, okay? So we pull up, we don't see it, we turn around, we start heading back, and we're getting closer and closer to the campsite, and then it was getting dark, it happened. A male lion steps out of the weeds right in front of our car. I have never seen paws so big in my life. I've never seen teeth so scary in my life. And this lion is kind of casually moving towards our car. And it absolutely frightened all of us. The driver was gripping the car like this. What do I do? What do I do? Roll up the windows. Don't say a word. I mean, granted, we were in a car, but it was a really small car. And then the worst possible thing that could have happened next to the car dying happened. Another lion came out of the woods. Male lion. So we were surrounded by two male lions. Now, I've been to the Indianapolis Zoo. I've seen dozens of lions before. I've taken my kids, we've laughed, we've eaten popcorn, we've looked at the lion, we've even made fun of some of the lions before. Why in the world, when I'm exactly the same distance from those lions, was I frightened out of my wits, adrenaline coursing through my body when I was in South Africa and I was looking at a lion? It's because there's safety. When you're in a zoo, you know they're behind something. There's a cavern. There's something separating you so that you can perform at your best. You can relax. But when that safety is broken, the adrenaline's going, and you're making all sorts of dumb decisions. I swear I think our driver was going to strip off his clothes and just start running outside screaming. Okay, maybe that's an exaggeration.
What would that have done? Any idea?
It was kind of like Will Ferrell in Talladega Nights.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Anyway, but my point is, unless you have safety, you cannot get into a point where you can have dialogue, right? And dialogue comes from mutual respect. Right? You have to have mutual respect for each other and mutual purpose. We've got to seek the exact same thing in order to move forward.
And one of the things I want us to see is that, you know, these things are scriptural principles. I mean, you know, while these are things relationally that help us understand how to operate and how to create and take our relationships to new places, I mean, these are scriptural things. In fact, if you look at James chapter 1, we see this apostle, and he says this very thing that Scott's describing. He says, "Brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." In nearly every scenario where I find myself in a stuck place relationally, maybe I blow up, maybe we're not experiencing a pool of shared meaning, it's usually because I've been quick to speak, slow to listen. And I think that's our natural. It's always us wanting to communicate what my desires are as opposed to really trying to understand and create that safe environment. He says, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. And I think that's a really big thing. You know, I think that if we want to create that safety, if we want to create that environment for dialogue, we have to be quick to listen, slow to speak. And Jesus said something about this really fascinating. You know, Jesus, one of his most poignant, one of his most focused, pointed statements was when he was talking in the Sermon on the Mount. Here's what he says. He said, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Now, you know, oftentimes we think about this verse and we think treasure is, you know, my money. I mean, we often make that reference there. Where my money is, that's where my heart is. And that's obviously the connection there. But I want us to think of it like this. I brought, you know, something from home. Of course, it couldn't be a day at Crosspoint without some kind of physical example, right? So, I've got a heart right here. I want you to think about this being my heart. You know, treasure comes in many more forms than just monetary. I mean, treasure are things that we value. I mean, whatever we treasure, whatever we value. And when it comes to relationships, you know, if I value selfishness, if I value, and none of us are going to say I value selfishness, but let me put it this way. If you say, you know, I like to get my own way. I really like to promote my agenda. I don't really, I listen long enough till I can create a break and I can jump in and tell them what I think. That's how I operate oftentimes. What I'm saying is I'm making selfishness a value. If selfishness is attached to this balloon, to this heart, wherever this heart goes, wherever my balloon, this thing I'm chasing after, this treasure goes, my heart immediately follows it. You know, if pride is something that I treasure, and you might say, well, I don't know if I treasure pride. Well, let me ask you this. You know, are you at the place, is there a critical relationship in your life that you say, you know, for me to acknowledge that maybe I struggled or failed or maybe just didn't have it all together right here. You know, man, I could look really bad in that scenario. I mean, it's going to look bad to my kids, my spouse, to people that know me. But if pride is something you treasure over, you know, healing one of those critical relationships, and that's something you treasure. And wherever that pride goes, your heart will follow that. Your heart just follows. And it brings us back to this whole idea that starts with the heart. I mean, if we want to take our relationships to a new place, we have to ask ourselves, what do we treasure?
Right. I completely agree. It really comes down to the thing that we talked about at the very beginning. It starts with where your heart is and getting control of the motive before the behavior happens. When you can do that, you can begin minimizing the cost of a very difficult conversation where things were said that never should have been said. You begin kind of putting a name on the issue, right? And you know, when you name the issue, suddenly there's some healing in that. And I think the last thing, the physiological thing that happens, is it just begins to occupy your brain, right? Let's get the blood back into the higher reasoning area of the brain. But it starts with the heart, which is the interesting part about the relationship between the heart and the brain.
Exactly. Well, you know, we have decisions every day. I mean, we're not talking a one-time breakthrough right here. We're talking about how every day do we make decisions that allow us to have the right conversations, to do them well. And it's one of those things where, you know, we don't live in a society, at least most of us, where there's something mastering us or that's guiding every decision we make. We have the freedom of choice. I mean, you have conditional freedom to go to work or to stay at home every day. You have the opportunity to say, you know, I'm going to decide to marry someone or I'm going to go and continue to play the field. You know, you have the opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to get an education, I'm going to get my degree, I'm going to work at Walmart the rest of my life. I don't know. I mean, not that working at Walmart is bad, but you know, you have a decision every day, and we forget that sometimes. We forget that we have a role in the experiences that we create for ourselves. And I think most of the time, our everyday choices are made without the realization that we play an active role in contributing to our day in and day out experience. And if I'm really honest, you know, I got really excited about this series because I believe God wants to break us free of the barriers that we've experienced in the past year. I mean, if you've gone through and said, you know, there's some changes I want to make, I believe the heart of God is to allow us to begin to break free of those barriers. So as we're talking today, our relationships, a critical relationship in our life, can go to a new place. In fact, the Apostle Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians. He says, now the Lord is Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And David experienced this. I mean, we looked at David and how, you know, he was a master of doing relationships badly, of struggling with integrity, and yet he was open. He was willing to be interrupted. He was willing to just allow God to search his heart and to begin to lead him. And take a look at a few of the words he says shortly after this. He says, I will walk about in freedom, for I have sought out your precepts. Now that's interesting to me because, you know, precepts are laws, commands, instructions, and oftentimes whenever we think of the law coming our way, we think of a life of restriction, and yet that's not how it is. I mean, when I understand this whole idea of God's way coming to me, or me beginning to go God's way of life, I begin to follow His ways, it actually creates freedom. And let me just be really clear, nobody cheerleads your freedom like God does. Nobody. I mean, your government doesn't cheerlead your freedom. Your spouse doesn't cheerlead your freedom. Your union doesn't cheerlead your freedom. I mean, God is the only, He's the greatest cheerleader you have. And so that's why I'm really excited about this series. If this is new stuff to you, I tell you what, and if you're serious about wanting to make breakthroughs relationally, career-wise over these next weeks, man, this is going to be great for you. You're going to experience green pastures that you've only seen in Avatar. All right? I mean, I believe you're going to go to new places. And so the question we have to wrestle with today is, do I want to experience more of God's goodness and God's fullness in my relationships? And we have to ask ourselves that. Is there a relationship in my life, a critical relationship that's just stuck right now? And if it is, you know, I have a choice to make right now. right now, today, before I walk out of here, of whether or not I'm gonna do something about that.